All right, good morning. Teach Better Family, I am here with the wonderful Chad Ostrowski, and he was with me as we did the Admin Mastermind. Just a reminder for those who maybe are just, you know, catching this on YouTube for the first time, this is the Admin Mastermind recap. We meet every Tuesday morning, and we just talk about a variety of different topics. This month, we were talking about student engagement, and so this was the last session of the month as we're going into our next October topic, which is on student discipline. However, this conversation was all over the place, which I absolutely love, because that's the other component to Admin Mastermind, is that we are here to support and to collaborate together. So, Chad, I'm excited because, you know, I started with this like weird question of, in a parallel universe, students are the ones enforcing discipline, rules, everything for the teachers. What would be the most comical rule that they would make for the teachers to follow? And the answers were all over. I don't know if you remember some of the responses, but
like,
what do you remember?
No coffee in the classroom was one of the funny answers.
Yeah, I was about to revolt after that one.
Right, right, right.
As I'm drinking my coffee.
It's definitely a good middle school teachers, like my, like, you know, like middle schoolers tell you what they would make the rules every day, whether you want to or not, because they'll just like, they'll come in the class and they'll say, hey, can we go outside every day for no reason? Or can we just have a free day just because I said so? Like, so I think like, I think administrators of like secondary schools, like sixth grade and above, were like, yeah, I know the answer because I get told it to my face on a daily basis. And then as a leader, you get told because then the students think you have way more power than you do to just magically make things happen. So it definitely made for a great conversation. But some, there were also some like more like kind of expected, but like other conversations that sprung from that, which I thought was cool.
Yeah, so one of them was no homework, and I was surprised by that because, you know, typically it's like no food and drink, you know, or like you're saying, like we're going outside all the time. So, you know, that response kind of then led us to a conversation about
like a whole can of worms.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Like it opened up a conversation about teachers not allowing retakes or just like homework in general. Like, do we have homework on the campus? Is it an expectation? What's the data say? Do we take late work? So, I don't know where you want to go with this, Chad, but I mean, I swear, like we spent probably a good 20 minutes just
well,
on
I can
that.
Spend another 3 hours on it if you want, so. But I don't think we have that time right now. So I think at its core, right, I think the crux of that entire conversation was what are the outcomes for school that we are creating? Are they behavioral or are they learning and mastery and academic focused? And I think the general consensus is it needs to be both, right? I think one of the ways the conversation took a turn was using homework as a way to increase accountability and expectations behaviorally for students, even with the understanding that there is very little research that I'm aware of that supports its use as a tool to increase academic understanding, mastery, or improvement or gap closure for students. And I thought that was a really interesting take, because if you've ever read a blog or heard me speak or gone to any Teach Better training, we're not like the biggest fans of homework in general. Because a lot of times homework is just that. It's a behavioral mechanism. It's a compliance measure more than it is an academic one. And I think that our conversation really reflected that. But I think I actually heard some points that were made by some of the administrators where they could tell certain populations of students came from certain schools based on if they had higher expectations in the classroom with things like homework, or if they didn't in the school that was down the road or the school that was before they came there. And I thought that was really, really interesting. And what I always come back to is the administrators that we were talking to even admitted the learning that was happening for in both of these environments before they got here in terms of the amount of mastery the students were coming with, the amount of thinking they were able to do was actually the same, or if not, unchanged by this. It was only the readiness to be a student in the game of school that they were trying to show them that became the issue. And this to me is like the big question. Are we teaching students to play the game, or are we teaching them so that they can learn and master the content, skills, and abilities we need them to be successful in life? And that's a huge philosophical question, in my opinion.
Well, and one I think needs to be answered daily, because there are too many things that are put in place that are for the game of school.
Right. So the real question is, does the game need to change to account for when learning's happening, but behaviors don't match our expectations? And I don't mean misbehavior. I just mean executive functioning, right? Like in a math class, I don't need to grade them on executive functioning, but executive functioning in organization can help them be more successful. So my question is, should we create more bridges to close those gaps as educators, as buildings, as schools, as classrooms, to overcome the lack of executive functioning that may be there? Or should we go, nope, sorry, you don't have executive functioning, you're going to struggle a lot? Like, to me, that feels wrong every time. Like, the idea that, like, I'm going to set you up to fail, sorry you don't have these skills because you didn't get homework or you didn't have these other things. Like, that's just a weird mindset that I have a hard time, like, getting on the side of. I can see where the arguments come from, but I will always go, if we know executive functioning is an issue, we need to change and adapt the game or the learning environment to scaffold those skills throughout the year. But we need to start at a place where a student can feel successful in whatever classroom, school, hallway, cafeteria, you name it, like that we want to.
All right. So since we're opening up cans of worms here, the next thing was on.
They're crawling everywhere, man.
They're everywhere, man. Put them back. So we talked about retakes and, you know, the fact that, you know, there were some excuses on various campuses about, like, it's not preparing them for the real world.
Yes.
And how, like, some of the administrators were trying to show, like, there's plenty of examples of adults who are able to redo things or have retakes, you know, if, even like the teacher assessment that has to be taken for licensure, you know, or your driver's test. There's a lot of different examples there. The other one was that someone brought in a college professor So Chad, go ahead and explain that as far as, you know, them sharing their experience.
Yeah. So I'm just going to say this out loud so everyone can hear it. And then you can pause this and replay it for anyone else who needs to hear it. And if they still don't agree, you can send them my email or reach out to me. I'll gladly have this conversation. The idea that we are using poor instructional practices today to prepare our students for poor instructional practices in the future is never a good argument to make. If we as professional educators are trying to prepare students for a world that is more hard or more difficult than the one they are currently in, doesn't it make more sense to better prepare them with higher levels of mastery, higher levels of understanding, so that when they get to that imaginary college classroom, right, that doesn't let you do retakes, or that doesn't allow you, that has a bunch of homework, 3 hours of homework every night, like whatever argument you're making, like I'm going to tell every teacher or every administrator right now listening to this, anyone making the argument that because college is X, Y, and Z, we need to prepare students for X, Y, and Z here, that's the worst argument you could possibly make. The first reason is because good instruction is not dictated by poor instruction that happens later. Period. End of story. Fight me. Okay. You're wrong. I will die on this hill. Like no one can ever make that argument to me. But here's the second argument. And this came out in our conversation. There was a school where these arguments were happening and they brought in a Harvard professor. So literally you can't make an argument to me that like Harvard is not a prestigious institution that has been storied and legendary for their academic prowess in this country since its inception, right? A Harvard professor came in and goes, I do retakes all the time. I just did one last week. Please stop telling your students that college professors aren't doing this. And I think this was a single example of something that it uncovered something that I think is actually true. I do not think that a lot of college professors are the best example of good pedagogy. I think there are a lot of good examples of bad pedagogy in post-secondary education. However, I think there is an increasingly large amount of good pedagogy happening and trickling up into post-secondary education. And I think that the model, the idea of colleges being this rigorous place that doesn't care about student success, that doesn't want students to succeed, that is sink or swim, is a myth that we have created based on something that is 30 to 50 years old. Here is the truth. If colleges stop serving students, they run out of money. They are businesses. They cannot stop serving students, and they have adapted to this. They have changed their models. They've made themselves more project-based, more real-world focused. They've made them more mastery-based and competency-based. They've accepted mastery transcripts. They allow retakes. They do remote and asynchronous learning. Like, all of these things are happening at the college level. So if you are a high school teacher that is daily beating the drum of, in college, they're not going to let you do X, Y, and Z, you are legitimately lying to your students. That is not true. It may be true in single cases, but that is a broad statement you should not be making. And it's a defense that is very thin and a straw man argument that can be pushed down very quickly by a Harvard professor when you bring them in. So here's my question. Don't be afraid to make those changes because you haven't made them before, right? But like, I actually love when teachers bring up that argument because it forces them, if you ask the right questions from an administrative lens, to get to the root cause, right? And we were able to have a lot of that conversation yesterday. And I think that was super valuable because I think a lot of administrators go, what do I do with this argument? And that's literally what I say to any teacher. I go, does crappy instruction tomorrow make us want to model crappy instruction today? Does that make sense, right? If I'm a soccer coach and I know that the coach after me is really, really bad, should I just do what that next coach does to make my students prepared for the bad coaching they're going to have? No. Like this idea, this logic doesn't make any sense. And I think it's been perpetuated in school as we are preparing for the behaviors of college versus we are preparing for our students to be successful, when they get to college.
Well, and just to kind of like tie it all back together to the student engagement piece, like when we made our changes on our campus in regards to, you know, redos and retakes for quizzes, tests, those types of things, the assessments, our students were actually more engaged because they felt like they actually had an opportunity to master the skills instead of just moving on to the next thing.
You're and valuing so, the knowledge. Yes. Yeah.
So we saw like a huge piece of growth in our attention because the students knew it wasn't just one and done. They knew that they had an opportunity to go back and to fix the mistakes or the things that they didn't understand. And so it actually gave them hope and it gave them, you know, more engagement in the classroom. And so just to tie it back to the topic for the month, I do think that even though we went kind of all over the place during our conversation, it did still coincide with the topic.
It goes back to creating the environment the students are able to engage in the first place.
Yep.
If it's a sink or swim environment and I'm sinking, I can't engage in it. Like if it's like, I did my best, you're drowning, I'm going to move on, catch the next boat. Like that's not an environment that I can actually neurologically or physically or emotionally engage in because it's not set up for me to be successful. It's not. I can tell you that like the retakes thing is hilarious to me because like oftentimes they go, oh, we're not giving retakes because that doesn't happen in the real world. And you already alluded to this, right? The GRE, the LSAT, the MCAT, the driver's test, like all of these like big life moments, these things that like professional doctors, lawyers, any professional, like the GRE, I don't know if that's still a thing, but it was a while ago. Like, to get into grad school, you have to take these high quality, like super high quality, like exams. Every single one of them allows retakes. Every single one of them. There's not one of them that doesn't allow retakes. Even in PhD programs and doctoral programs, they'll let you correct and resubmit your thesis or your in all of these things are allowed to be redone because it's about the where you end up, not how you got there. And so why are we not modeling that with a third grade spelling test or a sixth grade social studies test or a high school algebra test? Like, that makes no sense. And what we're actually doing when we don't allow retakes is we are devaluing knowledge. The one question you should ask a staff member who doesn't want to allow retakes is, does knowing how to do two-step equations or whatever the test was on have any less value on Friday than it did on Wednesday? And the answer is unequivocally no. The value of that knowledge is exactly the same. In fact, you can even say, well, if the knowledge is the same, why isn't the feedback the same, right? So if it's still worth the same amount, and here's the actual answer that the teachers don't like to say, it's because they're grading the behavior of knowing things on time and turning things on time. Well, if you want to train kids to work in factories in the 1920s, you're in the wrong century. Like, you just are. And that's just the truth of it, right? Like, that's no longer the case. We care about the growth of employees, even on the team, right? Like, I make mistakes all the time on the team. Now I'm in a position where, like, I can get away with more mistakes than most people.
Make mistakes too, Chad, and I'm not at the highest level.
But if every time one of our team members made a mistake, it was, sorry, you're fired, you're gone, like, you made a mistake, that would be a horrible way to run a business in the real world. And businesses that do run, like that in the real world fail, right? So there's no argument about this real world. And the truth is, when we actually care about student growth, we care about overcoming barriers for students. And when we overcome barriers, we are giving them pathways so that they can fully engage in the learning process. And the best part is it doesn't take you putting on a silly hat or blowing something up in the beginning of the front of the classroom. You just have to create an environment where they're accepted, able to be successful, and they're able to feel like they belong there. And it's not like everyone can do it except for me. That has nothing to do with the lesson plan you have that day. That has everything to do with the environment and philosophies you have about caring about kids and their growth, period. And when you do that, engagement always follows.
All right. I think that's a great place to end. Chad, I appreciate you so much. Just for everyone that's watching or listening, maybe on the Teach Better Talk podcast, join us every Tuesday morning, 9 a.m. Eastern. It is a free collaboration session. A mastermind is there for you every single Tuesday. And if you need to sign up, if you haven't done that yet, teachbetter.com/mastermind. And it doesn't cost you anything, but just a little bit of your time. And we just appreciate just this last week, the conversation was rich, and I can't wait for October's topic of student discipline. And Chad, again, buddy, appreciate you.
You too, Brent.